Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Omega Mon XE for DB2, PM, PE, Situation Usage, and Best Practice. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how Omega Mon XE for DB2, PM, PE can help you meet the performance and availability management challenges of DB2 on ZOS. The speaker for today's teleconference is Ed Woods, IBM Consulting IT Specialist. At this time, I would like to hand the call over to our speaker, Ed Woods.
Thank you. My name is Ed Woods. I'm a Consulting IT Specialist with IBM Corporation. And today we're going to be talking about using Omega Mon XE for DB2, situations, talking about recommended situation creation options, best practices. We'll talk about examples of situations that you might deploy in your Omega Mon XE for DB2 deployment. This is a presentation I put together in response to a very common question request that we get, which is basically, you've implemented and deployed the tool. You have Omega Mon up and running across your environment. So now what do you do to get to the next step, the next phase, which is basically, how do you customize, optimize, and tweak the monitoring environment to more effectively reflect what your monitoring requirements are? So we'll talk quite a bit about what the capabilities are that come with the Omega Mon toolset, focusing very specifically on situations. What situations do you get out of the box with the tool? How you can perhaps use some of those as a starting point, and then how you can customize and craft and build your monitoring environment from this starting point. So, going to the slide that says Agenda, we'll do a brief introduction to the Tivoli Enterprise Portal for those that are not familiar with what the portal, or the TEP as we call it, is. We'll talk about situations, the benefits of situations. We'll look at the coding and setup options of situations, how you can build them, how you create them. Then we'll talk about some recommendations on optimal ways to create situations. What's the optimal way to use situations? Certain just recommendations that I have, you know, acquired over the years, best practices and things like that. We'll talk about various types of alerts, categories of alerts, and how you might customize certain alerts to do, in certain cases, even double duty using the Boolean logic capabilities that come with the situation editor. We'll have several examples of useful DB2 alerts, and we'll have just a brief summary followed by a question and answer. So going to the next slide, that says Omega Mon XE for DB2 PMPE version 4.1. So V4.1 is the current generally available release. That's the latest and greatest release, I should say. There's also a 3.1 that's commonly available as well. We have major features, functions, and components. You have your real-time thread monitoring and analysis, subsystem analysis, monitoring of virtual pools, EDM pools, locking, logging analysis, storage detail analysis, object I/O analysis, lock conflict analysis, historical as well as real-time monitoring, monitoring of the coupling facility structures, global lock analysis. Also included with this is support for such things as zip engines. Also included with this is the ability to monitor such resources as DB2 Connect, and also automation capabilities that come integrated within the tool, the ability to issue commands from situation alerts and things like that, and also using policies. This all comes as part of the Omega Mon suite. Going to the next slide, it says Tivoli Enterprise Portal, the TEP, Integrated Performance Availability and Systems Management. Part of the notion of the TEP or the Tivoli Enterprise Portal is the ability to have what is in essence a common user interface for a variety of Tivoli performance and availability management solutions. So this TEP or Tivoli Enterprise Portal, once you understand the navigation of the TEP and how you use it, how you can customize it, how you can build situations to monitor certain key resources, this methodology can be applied just as well, not only just to DB2, but to ZOS, IMS, CICS, and also monitoring of resources that are outside of ZOS, Unix, Windows, Linux, etc., Z-Linux. And so this is, in certain ways, a generalized methodology that you can apply across a variety of subsystems and platforms. But our focus today is going to be on DB2 running on ZOS. So the Tivoli Enterprise Portal enables what is really an integrated alert and automation capability. And I mentioned alert and automation. So there's alerting that comes with the situation capabilities of Tivoli Enterprise Portal, but there is also command capabilities, automated correction capabilities, et cetera, that you can do with this as well. Going to the next slide that says, most business applications incorporate a variety of core technologies. This is an example of a customized view that you might build to monitor an application or a set of related applications, and you can monitor using the Tivoli Enterprise Portal in this example here, a variety of subsystems and components. And if you look in the central part of the slide where you see the red icons that say DB2 database and lock conflicts, those are showing red. In this case, OmegaMon DB2 has detected a lock conflict and some kind of a related performance problem in the DB2 subsystem. The icon has changed shape as well as color. And as a result, then, this is a way of notifying the whoever is viewing this screen or workspace, as we refer to it, that there is an issue with DB2. What makes that icon change shape and color is this mechanism called a situation. A situation is, at its core, an alert mechanism, but it's also, as I implied before, also an automation driver as well, if you want it to be. So going to the next slide that says about situations. Situations are ultimately the building block of the systems management logic of the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. It's the building block that you use to then in turn put in your what would be your expert system knowledge. That could be the system information, the situations that are provided by OmegaMon as part of the install process, but also your own knowledge of the systems. As you create customized situations and build these over time, these in essence become a database of performance management knowledge and availability management knowledge that's incorporated within the infrastructure. A situation may be used to highlight performance problems within key DB2 subsystems as well as other monitored resources, but again, our focus today is going to be DB2, so that's what we will pay attention to. You can use situations to identify DB2 subsystem problems that impact not only performance but also availability. And so we're going to cover both bases here. Performance, in other words, how is an application performing, how is the subsystem performing in terms of resource utilization, et cetera, but also availability. And availability can be just as important. Knowing that DB2 is up is nice, but you also need to have the applications with the connectivity, the necessary infrastructure and resources to be able to connect. If DB2 is there, but the application infrastructure is unable to connect, you still have an issue. You still have an outage. So what we're going to look at here then is not only just monitoring resources and monitoring things like elapsed times and I/O counts, etc., but also monitoring availability from the application perspective, from the subsystem perspective, from the critical resource perspective. And we'll look at examples of situations that handle each of these requirements. So going to the next slide that says situations allow for powerful and flexible alerts. In OmegaMon XE situation is the most flexible way you can come up with to create a dynamic, usable, meaningful kind of an alert mechanism. Because at its core, a situation can incorporate a very wide combination of monitored attributes and items and things like that. So it makes what is, in essence, a very intelligent alert. It makes a more intelligent alert and therefore a more meaningful and useful alert as a result. That's because at its core, situations can incorporate Boolean logic capabilities. So this Boolean logic then allows you to make the situation alert much more meaningful so that the alert can be crafted to the needs of a specific application or a specific subsystem or a set of specific resources. In addition, situations may be correlated with other situations. The idea then is a situation at its core is you're monitoring a key set of attributes, but in turn then you can correlate that and building block it with other alerts in other situations and grow this monitoring infrastructure over time. Situations, as I alluded to before, may also be used to drive automated corrections. So in other words, if a situation detects an issue with a DB2 subsystem or application, that situation may then in turn execute a command. That command may be executed at the level of the monitoring agent or somewhere else within the Tivoli infrastructure to issue a corrective action. That corrective action could be an actual ZOS console command. That corrective action could take the form of simply a notification, a page, an email, or something like that as well. So going to the next slide, that says situations, usage, and benefits. At its core, a situation is going to highlight a performance and or availability issue. So in the example we're looking at here, this is an example of the default enterprise view. And we see on the left the navigation tree, and I've scrolled it down to the DB2 subsystem portions where the DB2s have checked in to the Tivoli monitoring infrastructure. We see then I've put the cursor over one of the red icons on the navigation tree, and we get a flyover window that tells us why that particular item on the navigation tree is red. And what I've done in this example here is I've created a thread performance monitoring alert and given it a name, EW_thread_alert. We see where the situation has fired, and we see the date and time of when it's fired as well. To see additional information on this particular alert, what you would do is you would click on the blue link icon to the left of the alert name, and that would take you down to a detailed view. Also looking at the situation event console, which we see in the background, we see the various situations that are currently in an open status in the Tivoli monitoring environment. And you see certain ones are informational, other ones are warning, other ones are critical, etc. Okay, so from the alert, if you click on the blue icon to the left of the alert, you would click then to see additional alert detail for that situation in question. Going to the next slide that says situations, usage, and benefits, the next thing you can do is, of course, as I implied before, is you can issue an action based upon a situation being true. So in this particular example, we see that if the situation, EW thread alert, is true, we can issue a console command. I've highlighted the system command portion of this particular. What we're looking at here is actually a portion of the situation editor. And in here we see we're going to issue a ZOS console command. It's going to be a log command. So basically we're just going to throw a message on the console. And that message is going to highlight not only that we have a DB2 thread alert, but we'll also use ampersand substitution variables to put in the plan name, and to put in the authorization ID and other information, so we'll be able to see detail on what the particular application was that was having the issue. Using this command line capability, you could do things such as just issue messages, pass messages on to other console automation. You could also do such things as automate the kill of a runaway thread. So when you combine the power of the Boolean logic capability of the situation editor with the ability to have a pre-formatted command to do, say, for example, a thread kill or something like that, then what you have is a much more intelligent, if you will, resource-limiting facility than what you would get out of the box otherwise with DB2. Going to the next slide that says situation usage and benefits, you can also use situations for informational event analysis. So what I mean by that is that you can have situations that drive alerts, like what we saw a couple slides ago. You can have situations that drive automated corrections, which is like what we looked at in the prior slide. You can also use situations as an informational gathering mechanism. And what I mean by that, then, is you might want to know, for example, how many times you reach a certain high water mark or threshold for a certain kind of resource usage within DB2. Now, in the statistics traces and things like that, there are some counters that are available now that show some of these high watermark numbers, but not all the various numbers that you might want a high watermark are available. Therefore, then, this is a way to be able to say, well, if we're having a problem with threads, well, how many times are we having a problem with it? Is it happening once a day, 10 times a day, once an hour, 10 times an hour, every minute, whatever it is? So when a situation fires and is true, that also, in essence, gets stored. That information gets stored within the Tivoli infrastructure. And so if you look at the bar chart that I've exploded up here, we see down towards the bottom how many times we've had the EW thread alert that we were looking at before, how many times that has gone true in the last 24 hours. So you could create other situation alerts that will do things like track the same thing, and it's not necessarily that you're trying to do these as an alert mechanism, as more of an information gathering mechanism. How many times have you hit a certain number? So let's begin at the beginning then. So we'll go to the next slide that says, A basic example situation. We're going to alert on a thread with more than n get pages. So here we're going to look at the situation editor, and we're going to see the various tabs. So we're going to look at the formula tab, which is what we have on this screen here. If you look in the middle of the formula tab portion of the screen where it says get page count, that's our alert criteria. So this is a basic situation. We're just looking at one simple number here, which is, you know, any thread that exceeds 1,000 get pages, we're going to generate an alert on. The other tabs, the distribution tab, the expert advice tab, action tab, etc., these can also be used as well. The distribution tab basically will let you specify where does the situation run, for what subsystems. You can deploy this to all the DB2s that Omegamon is monitoring, or you can just have this set up and executing just on one or two individual DB2s, or you can make lists of them, and I'll show you the examples of lists in a bit. The expert advice tab allows you to specify what to do. So in other words, if someone sees this alert, what can they do with it? What are the appropriate actions? Who should they call? This is user customizable type information. And then the action tab is where you would specify the command that you would want to issue. If you look towards the bottom, that's where you see the state of the alert in question. Is it a critical? Is it a warning? Is it an informational? And then also underneath that, whether that should run at startups. In other words, when Omegamon starts up, should this situation be distributed and deployed? To the left of the severity level, you see something that says sampling interval. All of these things are based upon the notion of a sampling interval. So in other words, what we're looking at in this case here then is every minute and a half, we're going to go out and we're going to look to see if there's any threads that meet the criteria of get page count greater than 1,000. And if it detects that, then it will be true. Moving up then towards the top left portion of the screen, we see the pop-up wherein you would stop the situation, start the situation. You could delete the situation if you wish. And then also you see underneath that where it says associate and dissociate. Associate and dissociate basically control where does the situation show up on the, for example, on the navigation tree. How do you connect this alert with an icon or a place on the physical view or whatever? That's how that is driven. So this is the base definition of the situation. And then if we actually start the situation, such as what we were looking at before, then we would go to the next slide that says example thread alert situation. So here's our EW thread alert that we were looking at before. And if you click on the blue icon, that's to the left of the alert name, that would take us to the situation detail. So this would then show us what is the problem, what are the details, is there expert advice, or are there any predefined actions. So what is the problem? That's where you would see then where that situation is associated relative to the navigation tree. If you look in the what are the details portion, that's where we're showing how many threads. In this case, there's two threads that meet the criteria. We have a DISServe and the DSNJDBC thread that have met the criteria of more than 1,000 get pages. If you continue on down to the bottom right, we see expert advice. And inside this expert advice, this is where we put more explanation of what is the deal with this particular alert, what should be done if the alert is detected. You can put in phone numbers, you can put in web page link references, HTML links, etc. All of this can be done within the situation editor setup. And then over to the left side at the bottom, you see the take action. This is where you can have predefined commands. So if you wanted somebody to actually go ahead and kill one of these threads, based upon this alert firing, you could have a predefined kill command ready to go and execute from there. So the idea then is that if you have an alert, it's a general recommendation to have expert advice to go along with it so that if someone sees the alert, they know what to do, how to manage it, how to deal with it, etc. So that's the example of a basic situation, single metric and fire and go. Going to the next slide, this is where we'll talk a little bit about the Boolean logic capability of situation editors. So this slide says, take advantage of Boolean logic. Make situations more meaningful and useful. In this case, you can add additional columns or attributes. By clicking the Add Attributes, you can put in more columns of information. So in this case, I'm saying, well, gee, if it's a JDBC thread, I want the threshold to be 2,000. If it's a disk serve thread, I want the threshold to be 1,000. So in other words, I'm making this more application sensitive and therefore making it more real, perhaps a little more real world, a little more flexible to your specific management needs. Different applications will have different levels of critical versus warning, etc. You could also, from the add conditions, add additional attribute logic to add things like package name, auth ID, all sorts of other information as well to make this particular Boolean logic capability as detailed as you need it to be. Also, if you know, where we've clicked add conditions, so we have basically two attributes and two rows of information there. And you see under where it says situation formula capacity, I've kind of highlighted and pointed to that in red. That basically tells you how many additional attributes you could add to this particular situation logic. So you can use the Boolean logic. It gives you a lot of flexibility. However, do be aware that there is a limit to how many combinations of things you can put on a single situation. And so that situation formula capacity basically gives you an idea of how much room you have to work with there. So going to the next slide, I say use Boolean logic to reduce the number of required situations. So in other words then, instead of having one situation just to monitor disk serve and another situation just to monitor DSN, JDBC, you can combine that logic in a single situation. The advantage of this approach is severalfold. First of all, what it means is you're going to reduce the number of overall situations required to monitor your applications. Secondly, it will then also cut down on your monitoring overhead because you won't have as many different situations redundantly gathering and firing and requesting monitoring information. And then also, it's going to help for just from a maintenance standpoint. In other words, as you build and add situations and build and add situations at a certain point, you don't want it to be where you have just so many of these situations. The situations themselves become a maintenance headache as well. You want the tool to be an effective aid, not a maintenance impediment in and of itself. So by using Boolean logic, you have the ability to do as much work, if not more, by actually using, as a result, then even fewer situations to get the job done. Going to the next slide that says, use persistence option to smooth alert spikes. This is a nice little mechanism as well. There are certain situations that may be true, but they might only be true for a single interval because inherently you will have spikes and events and outliers that happen on systems. And as a result, what you have to do then is you could build the situation, then it'll fire, then it'll be true, then it'll go away, then it'll fire again, then it'll be true, then it'll go away, and back and forth. Rather than have this back and forth up, down, what you could do then is click the Advanced tab, as we've done here, and say, only fire this situation if it's true for two or three or however many intervals in a row, whatever makes sense. The idea then is this will smooth out some of these spike type scenarios, and the situation will only fire if it really is a problem. Going to the next slide that says, exploit managed system list to simplify situation deployment. The managed system list is a very powerful and useful mechanism. And it simplifies the maintenance, the building, the management, and the creation of situations by basically what it does then is it lets you group together related systems in ways that make sense. Inevitably, in all shops, you're going to have test DB2s, production DB2s, QA and dev level DB2s, and there's alerts and situations that you might deploy in test but not deploy in prod. And similarly, there might be certain situations you'll deploy in prod but would not be meaningful or useful in test. Or that you might have different situation threshold levels in prod versus test simply because you might need to monitor prod much more tightly because it's more mission critical than test, for example. And then also in addition, you might have certain alerts that you would go ahead and send out to all DB2s, regardless of whether it's test, prod, dev, or whatever. So the idea then is you create a managed system list, and when you distribute the situation, you just distribute it to the list. So in this example here, I show that we're distributing our threat alert just to our test DB2s. We could optionally send it to our prod DB2s as well. I also created a managed system list for all DB2s, but you notice if you look closely, under the available managed system list, there's also one that says asterisk MVS underscore DB2. That's actually a system list that comes automatically with the OmegaMon tool, and what that is then is basically says anything that's a managed system type of an MVS DB2 is automatically incorporated into that list. If you have situations that you want to go to all DB2s regardless, you could use that system list. One of the advantages of that then is as different managed systems come online, it'll automatically get incorporated into that system list. You won't have to go back and edit it. So the managed system list is user-definable, customizable. It's a very useful mechanism, especially in a large shop environment where you have a lot of different LPARs and DB2s to reach out and touch. It's an excellent way to be able to build situations from a central point and then deploy them out as needed from that central point using the Tivoli portal. So that's a lot of the basics of situations, how you define them, how you build them, how you distribute them, how you can start them, stop them, persistence options, Boolean logic capabilities, action commands. All of this stuff comes with the situation editor. Let's move on now to some recommendations and just some general suggestions. So we're going to go to the next slide that says situations, general recommendations, and rules of thumb. The first recommendation I have is make situations meaningful, actionable, and useful. Now, what exactly does that mean? Well, first of all, you want situations to be meaningful. And perhaps at one level that seems somewhat self-evident, but actually I think it's an important thing to stress in that you want the situation names to be crafted so that a subject matter expert is not required to be able to understand the nature of the alert. So make the names understandable. I suggest some kind of a situation naming convention. Typically what we'll do, and you see the examples that I've created later in the presentation, I'll do things just on my own proof of concept systems. I'll just put my own initials on the front of it, but it could be a company name or something like that. The idea then is with a naming convention, it's easy to see what situations have been created by you, the user, versus what's been provided by IBM. And that way then it's easier just to manage these on an ongoing basis. Now, some places might just have a generic header for all situations. Some places might have it based upon various groups of users or whatever. As long as you have a consistent naming convention, the situation editor's naming capability is flexible enough to handle what most of your needs should be. So meaningful then, first of all, means give the situations a useful, meaningful, understandable name and have a consistent convention. Actionable, what that means then is you want to have some type of an appropriate notification. Now, that notification could be a red light or a yellow light that pops up on a workspace, and that workspace is something that is a display that someone is actually looking at. Could be a notification, could be an email, could be a message, whatever it is. You want the alert to go somewhere so that if you're taking the time to build and deploy a situation for the purposes of an alert, that when that alert is true, that it goes somewhere and somebody actually sees it. Actionable also means that if you have the alert appearing somewhere on a screen or somebody's getting emailed or whatever, the general recommendation is each situation have some level of expert advice attached to it. So you remember the expert advice I showed you earlier in the presentation. It's always good to customize that so that whatever the situation is, someone can pull that up and be able to deduce some type of meaning or know what to do or who to call or whatever. And where appropriate, if you have predefined actions available, go ahead and have those set up as well. So meaningful, actionable, and then, of course, useful. Well, it would be nice if they were useful. And this is an important area because one of the things that you don't want is phony alerts. Sometimes what I'll see customers do is once they see the ability of the situations, they just go out and they create tons of alerts, tons of situations, and then we have red and yellow lights blinking on and off all over the place. The problem is then is if you go too crazy with the alerts, what happens is you have a lot of noise, a lot of chatter, a lot of background noise, but as a result then, real problems that actually need to be addressed get filtered out, if you will, because you can't see them through all the phony alerts. So my recommendation is get rid of phony alerts. You want to have only true alerts. It truly is, in a lot of ways, a less is more type of an approach. Bottom line is, if an alert situation fires, it should indicate an actual issue. If there's a red light on the screen, that implies that somebody should be looking at it, that it is a real problem. It's not just there. It's not just red all the time and everybody ignores it. But there actually is. It's a real alert. It's a real problem. Somebody owns it. Somebody's going to fix it. There's going to be an actual consequence of that alert. So meaningful, actionable, useful. Some additional things to consider, some more advanced aspects of situations. So moving on to the next slide, you can correlate situations with other situations. Now what that means then is you can use the situation editor to basically take two more basic situation scenarios and kind of link them together to embed them, if you will. So in this particular example, I'm taking the threat alert, and I'm correlating it with a DB2 lock wait time critical alert. And if both of those are true, then that means, in turn, this situation is true as well. The idea, then, is you can start with basic alerts and then use a building block approach to grow and amass and grow and amass your systems management and performance availability knowledge over time. That's what this capability provides. Now, going to the next slide, one thing I'll point out, though, when we talk about more complex situations and things like that where we're embedding things and going across multiple tables of information or going cross-age or whatever, is that then that means that where that situation gets evaluated might be different than a more basic alert. So think of it this way. Something such as a basic threat alert where we're just saying, give me an alert where any thread is over, say, 1,000 get pages. That's a simple single table agent access alert that can run at the level of the agent, or as I show in this diagram here that says the TEMA. If I take that alert and then correlate it with information coming from other tables or other agents, etc., what that means then is that that alert might need to be evaluated and looked at higher up in the Tivoli infrastructure. In other words, inside the TEMS infrastructure. So the more complex you get with these alerts, the more information has to be correlated across agent or across table or whatever, the higher up the management infrastructure it goes. So this is something to just be aware of when you build this type of infrastructure. Some additional situation considerations, recommendations, etc. So now I've gone to a slide that literally says on top, additional situation considerations. When you're creating and deploying a set of situations, you want to be aware of such things as how many situations, how many managed systems, what's the refresh frequency of the situations. When we use the term managed system, typically what we're referring to is the DB2 subsystems in question. Each one of these is, in essence, in a Megamon speak, a managed system. You want to consider the number of required situations. The more situations you deploy, that's not only just a maintenance and deploy chore, if you will, but then there's also more situations that have to go out and check on a periodic basis and request information, et cetera, from the monitoring infrastructure. If you can use Boolean logic, such as what I demonstrated before, to reduce the number of required situations, so much the better. Another aspect of reducing the number of situations is you may or may not want to automatically make a warning alert to go with each critical. So for certain things, it may make sense to have a warning alert as well as a critical. For other things, it may not be a requirement. So I've seen some shops where every time they made a critical alert, they automatically made a warning. And while that was useful in some cases, in other cases it didn't really provide a huge amount of benefit, and we just had redundant situations running, in essence. So create the warning alert if there's a benefit to getting the warning. In other words, by getting that warning, it gives you time to go out and address an issue before it goes to a full critical state. Another aspect of it is take advantage of managed system lists to send the right situations to the right systems. The idea then is basically that rather than just distribute all this logic out to every DB2 in the world, send the appropriate alerts, the appropriate situations to the right places. Another thing that's important is be aware of the situation refresh rates. If you remember the formula tab, and down in the lower left corner, there was a sampling interval that you can specify. If you can have a standard whereby you can have some consistency to how often most typical situations would look at certain tables of information, so in other words, try to build all your thread alert situations on a 1 minute or 2 minute or 3 minute interval, whatever that is, by having things on the same table and the same interval, that allows the infrastructure to optimize this request so that then if I have multiple situations all looking at the same information and they're all running on the same interval, the monitoring infrastructure can combine that together and optimize it so that you don't have multiple requests for monitoring data, but just a single one. This can help quite a bit, especially as you grow and build and add many more situations. So then the question may become, well, how do you get a handle on what situations are running on one interval without looking at each individual one? Well, if you go to the next slide, you'll see an example here. If you do a right-click on the Manage System, you'll get a pop-up, and then you can say Manage Situations, and then you get a pop-up that will show what situations are deployed, which ones are set to auto-start, which one of these have expert advice. So you can see most of the ones we have here have expert advice. And then one of the columns that you can scroll over to will show the interval in question. So you can see, even in this example, there's several different intervals for all these various situations, from 30 seconds to a minute 30. Some are running on 5 minutes, some are running on 15 minutes. And so there's a whole confluence of different thresholds. So if you can have same table, same refresh interval, in a lot of cases, that will allow the infrastructure to optimize these things. So going to the next slide, it says eliminating the noise, time of day, day of week type considerations. I mentioned before when I was talking about manageable, meaningful, actionable, useful, all this kind of stuff before, one of the things I talk about quite a bit is I don't want phony alerts. You want to have meaningful alerts that actually reflect real problems. And so part of this then is part of the less is more strategy, if you will, then revolves around eliminating the noise. One of the big challenges with eliminating the noise is inherently there are certain situations and alerts that might apply to certain workloads but not to others, or might be useful off hours but not prime time, or there are things that you care about during the day but during, you know, the off hours when the workload is more batch intensive, you may not care as much about or may not be as critical just because the nature of the workload is different. So certain alerts are inherently going to be sensitive to certain times of day or day a week type processing. Workloads vary. Certain issues might be more critical at some times than others. Now, there's a couple ways you can address this. One way is you could actually put time of day, day of week type logic in the situations. But as I implied before, you have a limited number of these attributes that you can put in a single basic level situation. And so you could do it that way. It will work. And I think for a relatively limited number of these type of situations, that's a perfectly effective and useful way to do it. Another mechanism that might come in handy, though, is if you could take advantage of using policies to actually start and stop situations based upon needs. The nice thing then is you won't have to put the time of day logic into the underlying situations, just use a policy mechanism to manage the start and the stop. So going to the slide that says using a policy to manage situations, what a policy allows you to do then is, among other things, it gives the ability to, like in the example we show here, say if it's a weekday, to start the situations that we're looking at here. So an IMS transaction queuing alert along with a thread queuing alert, et cetera. So it isn't even limited to just DB2. You can start all sorts of different situations using this. So you can start situations, stop situations, and have this based on time of day, day of week type of requirements. One thing to be aware of with policies is policy does require that you have the what we call dashboard edition enablement included within your Tivoli monitoring infrastructure. Now, if you're a distributed user, you typically would be licensed for this capability. If you're a ZOS-only customer, then you probably would want to double-check with your IBM representative to make sure that you also have enablement for this dashboard edition capability. This dashboard edition is what's required to enable policies to work. The policy is a very nice, powerful mechanism that is, in essence, an extension of the situation and gives you a very elegant way to stop and start and deal with these time of day type of scenarios. So going to our next slide, this says Omegamon XC PMPE product provided situations. One of the things that you get out of the box with the Omegamon XC for DB2 tool set is a set of product provided situations. And so I've gone and I've listed out a whole bunch of these. Some of these, when you look at them, it's fairly straightforward in terms of what they are. CPU time warnings, CPU warnings, paging warnings, lock wait time criticals, etc. Some of these others may not be quite as obvious when you look at them, although if you're in a Megamon Classic CUA user, you may have set some of these exceptions, such as the ETIM, elapsed time exception, and a lot of these others. A lot of the product provided situations are intended as a way to aid in moving your alert processing from the classic CUA 3270 technology into the portal. These are useful as a starting point. My general recommendation with product provided situations is use these as templates as a beginning, use them as examples, and then you, what you can do is you can do a create another and make a copy of these and then move on from there. Going to the next slide that says looking at product provided situations, here's an example, KD5 underscore ETIM underscore warning. So the ETIM was one of the classic 3270 as well as CUA exceptions that looked at application elapsed time. So you see basically this one is just a single attribute alert, and it says anything that's over a certain number of seconds, generate an alert. Useful as an example, as a starting point, but typically you're going to want these application type thread level exceptions to be more sensitive to various plans, package, auth IDs, and things like that. So again, good as a starting point, good as an example, but you probably need to customize this more. So now, what I want to move towards next is examples of some of these situations you can build. And these are just typical examples of things people commonly request, things I've seen people do, and other suggestions I may have. And again, these are examples. You would probably need to take these examples and tweak and adjust these some for your own environment, but these are good examples. So I've gone to a slide that says categories of typical situation alerts. Usually when I'm starting out with a list of situations that need to be built, I usually put them into two or three major categories. You have your availability alerts, which are your infrastructure and application availability. In other words, is the necessary stuff in place for the application to work. Then you have your performance and your resource alerts. A performance alert could be things like an application that's just running a long time. That could be an application or actually a subsystem that's using a high amount of resource. And then, of course, you have your resource utilization alerts, which could be more things like storage utilization, pool utilization, things like that as well. So availability, performance, resource, these are the major categories. And typically, if you're going to build a set of alerts, you're probably going to want to cover each of these various aspects. And in certain cases, these categories might bleed over. And I'll show you combinations of where one kind of crosses into the other. Now, what are the resources that you need to build alerts on? Well, there are several key resources that you need to monitor quite closely in DB2. So I've gone to a slide that says, what are the resources? You have your DB2 application threads, looking for long-running problem threads, bottleneck issues, stored procedure activity, etc. You have DB2 locking activity. This could include just your general lock traffic, lock contention, data sharing locking, real versus false contention. You have your DB2 logging, log status, file activity. All your various virtual pools and EDM pools, including the size, utilization, hit ratios, IO get page activity. Then, of course, you have your DB2 subsystem address spaces, the address space availability, CPU utilization, paging, etc. All these various resources may need to be monitored, and you may want to consider situations that address some of these. Now, which combinations you use and to what extent, that's going to vary depending upon what your needs are. So what I'll do is we'll just quickly step through several examples just to give you some ideas. So I've gone to a slide that says application performance example, situations to track problem or runaway threats. So here we're looking at an example of using the Boolean logic to say, if I have a JDBC plan that's exceeded like 20,000 get pages for a specific user ID, and I'm in a certain DB2 elapsed time, so if all those are true, then that constitutes an alert. I could add additional lines, additional Boolean logic from there, and then I have the select condition pop up in the lower left corner that shows the additional attributes that I could conceivably put into this. So that's one example. One common usage that the portal works with well is this notion of creating alerts to track problem or runaway threads. Now, going to the next slide, one aspect or subtlety, though, is that certain thread types, you might have what's called thread reuse, in which case then these elapsed time counters and things like that might not reflect just a single thread, but multiple threads. So how do you take that into account? Well, you might try a different strategy. So in this case, we're just going to say we're going to look at a plan name, and we're going to look at the thread status. It's in SQL call. And if we see we have a really high I/O rate, in other words, this thread is really busy doing something, might be prefetching through some large tables, this might be a way to actually to capture that. And that way, then, we won't have to worry about things like the thread reuse and the elapsed time counters and things like that not reflecting just a single thread. So these type of rating mechanisms can work. Also be aware of, though, if you use these type of rate mechanisms, you might want to consider using the persistence option to tune out outliers and things like that. So going to the next slide, that says application performance example track store procedure schedule delays. So here we're just saying for our various packages, plans, whatever, if a procedure wait time is above a certain number of seconds, we're just going to generate an alert. Simple Boolean logic example there. You can make this application sensitive by adding additional package names and different threshold values from there. Another example of an application performance issue is, we get this one, is long-running applications not doing commits. So in this case, we're saying for a specific plan that we know should be doing commits, and we can see that it's been running for quite a while because we have the DB2 elapsed time, but it's less than once. In other words, we've done no commits. So we know this thing's run a long time. We know the application should be doing commits, but it isn't doing commits. This is a simple way to track that. Another example, application performance, just high wait times. So there's various wait times that you can track with this. Here we're showing an example of a certain plan with a high lock wait time. There's other service task wait times and other things that you could look at as well. We showed an example before of a wait time for a procedure. Same kind of premise, same kind of logic. Just trying to identify applications that are having certain performance bottleneck challenges. Now also, from an application perspective, we can also look at performance availability examples. So we've gone to the next slide that says track utility status. So here we're actually looking at a job, and we see that the utility status is stopped. So you can have a way to simply highlight certain utilities that are in a stop, failed, error status. There's all sorts of columns that show the status, the state, whatever, of the utility in question. Going to the next slide that says application availability example. So here we've gone from application performance to now we're talking about application availability. And by availability, what I mean is it's not necessarily this is it just DB2 is up or down, but that for whatever reason we're not able to talk to DB2 in this case. So what we're looking at here is we have, again, using Boolean logic, so we're kind of checking for a couple different things, but using a single situation. We're looking for threads waiting on limit. So in other words, are we waiting to create threads? That's basically what we're looking for here. And so if we have users waiting for threads is above zero, so if anybody's waiting for thread creation, we want to highlight that and capture that by using either of these columns and then generate an alert. If someone's waiting to talk to DB2 because we've exceeded our various thresholds, ID4, IDBAC, max DBAT, et cetera, we want to know that. Next slide shows another application availability example. This is similar to the prior example, only now what we're looking at is we're looking at a wait from the CICS pool attempting to talk to DB2. So if we have pool waits from the CICS perspective trying to connect to DB2, this alert could be used to highlight that. It's an availability example in a way, again, because what happens then is it's not that the DB2 itself is having an issue, but it's more a question of we're not able to talk to it. We're not able to get through the infrastructure to get to DB2. Another availability example is on the next slide. Here we're seeing that essential infrastructure availability is just not available. In this case, it's the DB2 Connect Gateway. So one of the things that comes with the Megamon XE for DB2, PMPE v4.1, is, of course, you have Connect monitoring. There's an agent that actually monitors the Connect Gateway and passes that performance information along with the status into the Tivoli portal. And so we see here we're simply looking at the specific server instance name, and if we have a status that's not equal to active. So if it's not active, then I want to know about it, and that generates an alert. going to our next slide. So now we've gone from application performance to application and subsystem availability. And now what we'll do is look at some subsystem resource examples here. So here what we're looking at is from the subsystem perspective, one of the biggies in a heavy dynamic SQL shop is the DSC, the Dynamic SQL Cache. And so what we're looking at here is basically the percent loads. If the percent of loads, the percent of time you have to load the SQL cache, goes above a certain level, therefore I'm not getting as good a hit ratio as what I would like to get, therefore I want to generate an alert. Now this 20% number here, this is just an example. Your mileage will vary in whatever your shop may be. You might have, you know, in some shops, 5 would be a good number. In other places, 50 would be a good number. It really just depends on the nature of the workload, how the applications are coded. Another subsystem resource utilization example, number of stored procedure address spaces. So in this case, what we're looking at here is we're looking at a couple of things, again, using Boolean logic. If I've exceeded the number of active stored procedures, or if the number of stored procedure address spaces goes above a certain level, if either of those is true, that tells me that maybe I need to start doing something to get an idea of what's going on with my stored procedure activity. Things are either queuing up, backing up, or I'm using an incredible amount of resource to drive all these stored procedures. So, again, no magic to these specific numbers. These are just examples. Your mileage may vary depending upon the settings in your environment. The next slide shows another example of resource performance and utilization kind of integrated together into a single example. Here we're again using Boolean logic. We're tracking EDM pool usage. So on the top line, we're saying if you have any EDM failures due to EDM full, and you notice that we're using the delta value there. So in other words, that's for a sampling interval. If that's true, we're going to generate an alert. Underneath that, we then have percent loads, and I've just chosen 2% as an example, probably a reasonable number in most scenarios. And basically we're saying if we're loading the CT, PT, or the DBDs above 2% for any one of these structures, then we might have a performance issue to be concerned about as well. So we're monitoring several aspects of the EDM pool usage and activity from a single situation alert. Going to the next slide, logging volume can be a bottleneck in some shops. You can have very high logging volume. So this is an example of how you can look at things like write delay counts, active buffer being written to the log, and then also, now you notice the last two columns, delta write buffer and delta activity. What that basically means is these are numbers over the last sampling interval. And so you can track these on an interval basis. And the idea then is if you have, for a period of time, very high log volume, you can generate an alert. And then this might be something you would alert on, or you might even use this as just kind of an informational measurement to just get an idea of what typical log volume is across various times a day. Now, again, these threshold numbers I'm showing of 100 here, these are just examples. Actual rates, workload, et cetera, will vary depending upon the nature of the workload that we're talking here. Going to our next slide, lock contention. You can track global as well as false contention using situation mechanisms. And so now these numbers are not percentages. These are actual rates. In other words, these are rates of these events per second. And this is calculated across a sampling interval. The sampling interval is specified as part of the OmegaMon configuration in what we call the ICAT configuration panels. And so every so often we'll go out, we'll gather that information, we'll see how many of these events occurred for that interval, and then come up with a rate from there. So again, these are example type numbers, but your mileage again will vary depending upon your specific workload. General rule of thumb that you typically try to apply those, you notice that global contention versus false contention, you typically want to keep the false contention within a certain percentage of the overall global contention. And so we're just trying to reflect that in the alert that we've built here. Moving to the next slide, subsystem resource performance example. So now we're monitoring the coupling facility. So here again, I'm kind of combining this. This is a combination resource usage availability alert kind of pulled together into one where we're looking at the various structure types. And here I'm actually wildcarding this. I'm actually saying anything that starts with GBP for a group buffer pool, if it goes above a certain size, I might want to know about it. Same thing with the SCA, so we could use structure size, structure utilization, You could also look at a structure status. In other words, anything that has an error status or whatever, you know, we'll kick that out as an alert as well. So that was several different examples going through different scenarios of types of situations you can build. Again, some of the numbers that I've used there are purely for just example purposes. Numbers that you would put in for your own environments would be very reflective of your own hardware, workloads, environments, etc. So, in summary, situations are the essential building block of the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. It's the situations that are the underlying management logic that lets you identify issues and highlight those issues and then automate actions upon those issues. The situations themselves are the core mechanism that you use to highlight your performance problems. The more you can understand about the dynamics of how situations may be effectively built drives the relative benefit. So a little bit of planning definitely goes a long way in terms of getting bang for the buck out of how you build and deploy and define situations. So understanding the capability of the mechanisms and the most optimal way to do it really does help you quite a bit. So ultimately, it is recommended to have a situation deployment strategy, methodology, have a naming convention, have a standard, come up with a strategy. As I said, things like less is more, tune out the noise, all these kinds of things are usually the most effective. Take advantage of the Boolean logic capabilities, and then you'll have something that's very easy to maintain, easy to build, but still very meaningful, logical, and gives you a lot of bang for the buck. And so with that, I'll thank you, and then I'll turn it over for questions. Thank you very much.
Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Our first question is, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Our next question is, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Our next question is, are you using OmegaMon XE for DB2 to monitor DB2 performance? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And our final question. We hope you've enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at this time. At this time, I'll turn the call over to Ed as we wait for our questions.
Great. Thank you very much. First, I just want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend the webcast today. I had a lot of fun putting together this particular presentation. I think it addresses a lot of questions that I get quite often in terms of how to use OmegaMon DB2 and the situation capabilities and things like that. And so I'll certainly be happy to address any questions you may have.
And we have a question from Deborah Jordan with Discover Financial Services.
I have a couple of questions. The first one is, we noticed that when you're setting up the alerts, it seems like everything is on a plan level. Are you able to set up alerts on a package level or on a database level with this product?
Yeah, you can. I think one of the examples I had showed a package level. Let's see. Yeah, if you look at the store procedure example, I actually use package name as a qualifier instead of plan.
Okay.
Basically, think of it this way. Any column of information or attribute of information that appears in the portal may be used in a situation. So I'm just showing some basic examples, but we're not limited by plan or package. Now, specific to database, you can do that as well. If you have the object analysis facility turned on, that in turn then correlates data up to what's called the group object analysis views. And in the group object analysis views, you can do alerts at database, table space level, et cetera.
Great. And what's the average overhead for running this?
The average overhead. That's obviously a pretty open-ended question because every shop varies. In general, overhead should be low. You know, it shouldn't be huge. That's where things such as the optimizations I suggest, like not going crazy with too many situations and things like that, can make a big difference. Big variances matter in terms of how much history data you collect. There's so many variables involved. It's hard to give you a single number. You know, what I usually try to shoot for, though, is, you know, if I had to pick a number right out of the air, which I guess I am, a percent or two or something like that. But, again, your mileage will vary. And a lot of it is just a function of how big is your environment, how big is your workload, how much history versus real-time data, et cetera. There's a huge number of variances to that.
Okay, and it does send out emails, right, once they can reach out? We can't set up to send out emails or pages.
There's not an email command per se, but what you do have is the ability to issue a command that can then in turn drive an email system. Usually what most customers have is they already have email systems in place. It's just a question of feeding that. So, for example, if it was an alert on the ZOS console, you know, we could put a message or a command on the console that could then in turn drive an SMTP mail server, and then off you go from there. But you could also then in turn drive some other mechanism to do it. So there's a variety of ways to do that.
Okay.
Once again, that is *1 on your touchtone telephone to ask a question. We'll now go to Robert DeFalfio with Sony Corporation.
Yes, hi. I had a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
With this portal now, I was wondering what IBM's direction was going to be for the future of the host-based CUA and ISPF interfaces. I remember in the past the discussion was that the ISPF interfaces were eventually going to be phased out, but that the CUA would remain. So that's my first question. Is that still the direction?
The direction as of now is as follows. Civil Enterprise Portal is the strategic interface. On the 3270 layer, Classic interface is the strategic interface of choice.
Classic?
Classic, yes.
Okay.
CUA interface will be phased out. Now, I'm not pre-announcing a certain date or time on that since, you know, I'm not management, so that's not in my province to make such proclamations. But the direction, and this is true of all the Omegamon ZOS monitoring tools, is
yep.
that it's going to be a classic 3270 layer and the Civil Enterprise Portal layer. CUA will be phased out.
As well as, of course, the ISPF interface from the
Well, ISPF interface, you can run classic interface under ISPF. So if you want to do ISPF type stuff, that's still available.
Yeah, I was wondering. No, from when it was the DB that came from more from the DB2PM.
Yeah.
Suite of products.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to remain, or is that going away as well?
It's still in the product. I'm not aware of any plans to shelve it at this point.
Okay.
Again, you know, I don't want to. I'm not R&D and I'm not management,
sure.
So all I can say is what I know currently. And right now, I'm not aware of any plans to shelve it. There are still useful pieces in there. We still support it and use it in the 4.1 release, and I'm not aware of any plan to sunset it.
Okay. Second question I had is, from a historical standpoint, is there any interface into we have the Performance Warehouse database set up on
mm-hmm.
on the host. Is
yes.
there any interface from the portal to the Performance Warehouse database?
Not as of yet.
Okay. Is there any plans for, are there any plans for that?
The long-term direction is to, and by long-term, I don't have a specific date either, but the PE GUI capabilities are going to platform into the Tivoli Enterprise portal. That's a very clear indication I've gotten from R&D on this. So
okay.
Since therefore Performance Warehouse is part of PE GUI, you can,
right.
you know, now as to is that going to be there next quarter, next year, I have no idea, but that is the long-term direction.
And would that replace, I guess, the existing historical capabilities of the portal?
No, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal has its own unique snapshot history capabilities that are used by a wide variety of monitoring agents, both ZOS as well as distributed.
Okay.
Now, what has happened is technically along the way, additional history collection gets portalized, if you will. So say, for example, in CICS task history, that's integrated into the portal, and you'll probably see comparable things happen in other pieces as well, including the DB2 and other stuff as we get to that point. So you're going to always have the core Tivoli data warehouse snapshot history capabilities, but above that, you're always going to have the unique platform-specific kind of history functions as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Woods, for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much again, everyone, for attending. Thank you for the time, the questions. You can download the replay at a later point, as well as the slides. And I'll be happy to, if you have questions in the future, you can always contact me as well at IBM. And I thank you again for your time and your attention. Have a good day. Thank you.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.